You can do great at your job, and you can still get fired. The world is so unfair. Hey guys! Hey internet, this is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode number 86, recorded May 11th, 2018, brought to you by RayRay.net. My name is Ray Ray. As you know, this podcast is all about NBA talk. We are sticking to that this episode as we are talking to John Corrales, owner of Red's Army, also contributor to Boston.com and Fox 5 in New York. And I've known John for a long time. I've known him for nearly a decade. I've had him on my podcast also last year as we talked about the good fortunes of the Celtics. And, well, the Celtics' fortunes continue to be good as they are now in the Eastern Conference Finals in a rematch against the Cleveland Cavaliers. As I told you before, John and I have gone through a lot. Even I haven't seen him in like a few years or so. But, you know, we've known each other. We've gone through the trenches and all that stuff. We are basically the early adopters of basketball Twitter. And also, we met at a convention called Blogs of Balls in 2009. That was pretty fun. Although, that Saturday night, I got super drunk. I don't remember what happened at that time. I'm still trying to find out after 9 years or so. Also, we met each other in Summer League. I played him horse, and I did not beat him. And the ironic thing is that me being a Lakers guy and John being a Celtics guy, he beat me with a hook shot, right? That's just ironic. Also, in 2012, a couple incidents happened. Well, I wouldn't call them incidents, really. That sounds terrible. But me and John, we were sitting next to each other in Media Row, and the Suns Summer League team comes by and goes to, you know, their area, basically. The coach at the time for Summer League happened to be a former All-Star, Dan Majerle. And Dan Majerle walks by, and I just say a casual, "Hey, what's up, Thunder Dan?" And then Thunder Dan just stops, smiles, and then gives me a fist bump as if it was like the smoothest thing, and as if we've been friends for like 25 years or so. And it was the funniest thing because like it looks so regular, and the entire media row just laughed at that. It was great. That might be like my favorite NBA moment ever, really. I mean, it's Dan Majerle, dude. That guy's great. And another story between me and John is that, well, since I lost to John at horse, we had a bet that I would wear a Kwame Brown jersey for one day in Summer League. So I paid the bet. We were in the media room, and Mark Cuban just happened to be there. And Mark Cuban looks at me as I wear my Kwame Brown jersey, and he just has this incredulous look on his face. So I told him the entire story about the horse bet, and Mark Cuban is just like, "Be nice to Kwame, man." So yeah, a billionaire just made fun of me for wearing a Kwame Brown jersey. So yeah, me and John have gone through some great times, and hopefully we'll see each other again soon. I guess I'm overstaying my welcome, but before I go on with this interview with John Corrales about the Celtics and the Cavs, just let me remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast. Well, not subscribe, because iTunes is still broken. You can download the podcast at RayRay.net and on Stitcher, and you can subscribe to this podcast on other podcast apps. I'm sure you can subscribe through Android as well. Follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass, and follow the podcast Twitter at RayRayIsFun, because you cannot fit all 16 characters of RayRayIsFundamental. That's about it. So yeah, let's go on to this interview with John Corrales. It'll be fun, I promise. Especially if you like Celtics.
This is Zach Harper, and you're listening to Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast, because Ray Ray is fundamental. You know, like those NBA commercials with the reading is fundamental. You get what I mean.
Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 86, recorded on May 11, 2018. My guest, old friend of mine, badass owner of the Red's Army site, Boston.com contributor, Locked On Celtics podcast, Fox 5 New York. You're everywhere in the East, man. John Corrales, man, no, what is up?
I'm just trying to, you know, get some money, do my thing. You know, I'm on that hustle, buddy.
Money's good, good. So, you're in New Orleans, just taking a couple days off, I guess?
Chilling. You know, I was kind of hoping that New Orleans would have extended their series, and last night would have been game six. So I was hoping that maybe I can catch a Warriors playoff game. But instead, it's just a long vacation. So, well, I mean, not a long vacation.
Right.
But a vacation, a weekend, in the sun, down in the south. I love New Orleans. It's one of my favorite cities.
So you're getting way wasted right now, right? So you're ready for this?
I'm starting. I'm starting to. You know, I've got my drink. I've got my sunshine. I'm sitting here poolside. So let's do this.
Cool. Awesome. So let's start with this because life happens fast. The National Basketball Coaches Association has their own Coach of the Year award, which apparently started this season, I guess, or last season. I don't even know, but
it was the last season. Yeah, it's the second one.
Yeah. So the winner of this award is for this year is Dwayne Casey. I'm all right with that. 50 season franchise record, number one seed in the East. That's cool. This one will probably made you a little bit upset, but Brad Stevens didn't get a single vote, which is mind-boggling to me, honestly.
Well, I'm okay. I mean, it's a little weird, but I know that the coaches only get one vote, so you can only put one name in there. So even if Brad Stevens was everybody's second choice,
right,
no one could pick him. So I get it. I get a lot of it. I don't understand Doc Rivers as the number one choice for one person. That one is... Like, he did a fine job. You know, they traded away Blake. They were hanging in. Like, he did a fine job. It wasn't terrible. It kind of went back to old school Doc a little bit. But for Coach of the Year? Nah. but whatever. That's fine. Whatever. What can you say? And
right.
We'll see what the actual Coach of the Year voting brings. That's going to be an interesting one. How funny would it be if Dwayne Casey wins both awards and is looking for a job?
Right. And here's the thing, because the media was the top three, I just said, and the awards will be announced until late June, which kind of sucks, but that's another story. But anyway, yeah, as you just mentioned, this happened 2.5 hours before this recording. Dwayne Casey was fired by the Raptors simply because they couldn't get past the LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, but it wasn't any sort of defeat. It was a sweep.
Yeah. Justified. I think it's because the Raptors got swept. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't a hard-fought, seven-game, LeBron was just better type of series. It was, they had game one, and we were watching it. I was watching the last 4.5 minutes of game one when the Raptors just didn't score and thinking to myself, nah, not again. It's not happening again. Oh, my God, it's happening again. I can't believe that this is happening again. And, like, that, I think, was the end of the series. Like, they had competitive games after that, but you just felt like after game one that they didn't have that thing that was going to close out the series. And LeBron, after that, was just like, I got him. I just got to do my thing, and there's nothing that they can do. If they had done that, if they had played that series tough and went to seven games, then I think people in Toronto would have been like, hey, what are you going to do? LeBron's LeBron. But they didn't put up a fight. They really didn't put up a fight. Lowry had some really bad stretches. DeRozan got benched. I mean, it was just ugly, ugly, ugly. But their cap sheet, Red, their cap, they're stuck. They got no choice. If you're going to sit there and tell the team, the fans, the city that this is not acceptable, something has to happen. And they really, maybe they'll find some sort of place to trade Lowry or DeRozan. Maybe there'll be some musical chairs because Washington and Portland have things to do to appease their fan bases. And who knows, maybe Kawhi can be involved in something. I haven't looked at potential trades like that, but you have to think that it's probably not going to happen, that they're going to have to run it back with most of the same team. And the only changes that they had were either fire Ujiri or fire Dwayne Casey, and it was Casey that took the fall.
You know, you mentioned you just watched the last 4.5 minutes of the game, of game one. Like, that pretty much summarizes the Toronto Raptors right now, because they basically missed every layup. They make one of those layups, they're probably still playing the Cavs right now.
Probably.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah, like that game, that entire series, hinges on them closing out game one. Like, when they beat the Wizards, I think there was a sense of relief. And right. I think there would have been a second sense of relief if they had just closed out that game one at home. Like, that was the game. That was it. And, I mean, how many times did Valanciunas just miss, miss? Like, I mean, it was so sad to watch. Just like, please, just somebody put that ball in. I really wanted the Raptors to do something. Give me more. But they didn't. And if they had beaten the Cavs in game one, then it might have changed the confidence. It might have changed how they attacked, how they felt, how they performed. But, you know, you can't go back and change history.
Right.
It sucks. Like, I just hope that the Raptors players feel horrible about Casey getting fired and do something to kind of respond to that. Like, I need Kyle Lowry to go see a sports psychologist or something to go figure out why he does this at the end of games. I like Kyle Lowry. He's a good basketball player. Why does he fade in these moments? That's tough. You know, these guys need to find something deep down and say, we cost this guy his job. And it's up to them to say, what can we do to kind of like make up for that somehow? And they got to go out and next season at least compete for the conference finals. It's going to be tough. Think about, you know, the Sixers are going to be pretty good. The Celtics,
yeah,
my guys,
mm-hmm,
you know, they look pretty good now, and they're getting Hayward and Kyrie back. And that's going to be tough for Toronto. Like, they really missed the window this year. This really was their window. Like, you had the Cavs, who are kind of gross. Like, their defense is terrible. They're in upheaval. But Bronze played a ton of minutes. Like, they had an opportunity to kind of take advantage of that and then come into the conference finals and take advantage of the Celtics, who, you know, are playing well but still depleted, and they had an opportunity. This was their path. This was the right path for the Raptors to get to the finals, and they blew it.
Right. Before we move on to the Celtics, I mean, have you ever seen, I guess George Karl was an example, but Dwayne Casey, 59 wins, number one seed, still gets fired. Like, how does it even happen?
That's tough. Like, the closest I can think of was Doc Rivers win Coach of the Year, and then the following year getting fired in Orlando. But he won Coach of the Year with like a 500 record.
Yeah.
And get the team to be respectable when they were supposed to be horrible, you know, which makes you think Nate McMillan should get some love for Coach of the Year for what he did with Indiana. It was kind of a similar situation, but not like this. Not getting the team to a number one seed and then getting canned, and, you know, potentially he won one Coach of the Year award, potentially being a finalist for the other, and being one of the front runners for the other. I don't know that I'd seen something like this before. This is wild.
Yeah, it's the NBA, man. Seriously, strange league.
It's crazy, man. It's fun, but like, I don't want to make it sound like flippant because it's a guy and his job. Although, let's be real, like, Dwayne Casey's gonna be fine. Like, yeah, you know, I don't want to make it seem like he's gonna go collect unemployment. He's gonna get the remainder of his contract, which is a lot of money. And then if he wants to be an analyst or if he wants to go coach, he'll go make millions of dollars more. Like, his career isn't over. He'll make a ton more money. So while I don't want to be flippant, he's gonna be fine.
Yeah, that's how it is for most NBA coaches who are fired, right? Like, they stay in the league somehow, right? So they're gonna be fine.
Casey's gonna be fine. He's the worst, absolute worst case scenario for Dwayne Casey is why he becomes a lead assistant somewhere for a little while.
Yeah,
you know, like Brown or something like that. But yeah, I don't even think it's gonna be that bad. He'll get a job somewhere, especially with so many openings. He'll get a job somewhere if he wants it, or he'll spend time, you know, on TV, ESPN or TNT, or he'll be fine. He'll be in the game.
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere.
Right. Okay. Boston Celtics. We talked last year about how they were in a prime position. And once again, they're still in a prime position. Back in the East Finals, we had strong regular seasons for the Sixers and the Raptors. Did you expect them back here?
No. Nobody did. I mean, coming into these playoffs, I thought that the road was possible, that if everything went well, Mm-hmm. Like, I wrote a piece on Boston.com with the optimistic and pessimistic view coming into the playoffs. And I mean, I tried to get really, really positive and really, really negative to kind of balance out to see what both sides, the arguments were on both sides. And damn it, that overwhelmingly positive scenario played out perfectly. I didn't expect all of that. My conclusion was it's probably going to be a little bit of both, but it was the overwhelmingly positive side that played out. They played the Bucks. They were able to kind of contain Giannis a little bit, you know, enough where he was frustrated and he couldn't kind of take over, and he was never really the best player in the series. I think Al Horford was the best player in that series. Chris Middleton was actually the best player for the Bucks in that series.
Right.
Which is a huge, huge win. When you can play Giannis in a 7-game series and he's not the best player, that's an amazing defensive accomplishment. So that worked out. And then I thought going into Philly that they had an opportunity to single cover Embiid because, you know, he's good, but he still has a lot to learn. And that Simmons without his jumper, if you can contain him and stay home on the shooters, that you weren't going to get those Miami type of, you know, Bellinelli, JJ Redick, Dario Saric just banging away threes, you know, a bunch of threes in a row. They never got that. Mm-hmm. You know, they never really got that thing going. And again, credit to the Celtics defense. The dirty little secret here is that the Celtics injuries were in places where they were deep. And, you know, Gordon Hayward went down. We didn't realize it at the time that Jason Tatum was this good. And we didn't realize Jaylen Brown was going to take this much of a leap in his second year, but they did. And they're really good players. Tatum is a really, really good player. Jaylen Brown is really good and has learned a lot. They've both made tremendous progression just in the course of this year. So they were deep on the wing. Terry Rozier stepped up. So even though Kyrie went down, they're deep with ball handlers. Shane Larkin, which it kind of sucks that Shane Larkin got hurt.
Right.
But Shane Larkin is, I think about it, they signed him away from Europe. He wasn't even in the league last year. And they're getting productive minutes out of Shane Larkin. Mm-hmm. So they've been lucky that the injuries are places where they can sustain them. Now, if Al Horford goes down, they're screwed. Forget it. It's over.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy. Like, he's the one guy that they can't afford because there's like a handful of players in the league that can do everything that Horford does. You know, for a guy his size, hit the three, to drive, to post and hit those shots and score down low, to pass the way he does, one of the best passers out of the post, one of the best passing big men in the league, then to defend guys like Embiid effectively, and then to defend Ben Simmons effectively, to be able to switch out on the guard and then switch back on into the post. Just amazing work out of him. So the Celtics have been able to withstand a lot of these things because they've got guys that they've had depth at those positions. And, of course, they've got Brad Stevens to maximize everybody's abilities. So it's worked out. And I think they can beat the Cavs. I really do think they can beat the Cavs.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to Brad Stevens, let's talk about Al Horford really quick. How do the fans in Boston look at Al Horford? Because everywhere else, he doesn't seem to get enough credit. It's like, oh, his stats are too low. He should be an all-star. Blah, 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 blah. Obviously, I think he's really good, but
there's some of that in Boston, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people, like, I've had fights. Yeah, it's funny because who is it? Was it Tom Ziller that started that whole thing about how bad NBA Twitter has gotten?
Yeah.
And he specifically referenced the Al Horford slap fights that happen all the time on Twitter. Uh-huh. So I almost feel like he was subtweeting me because I had a bad habit for a while of getting into those slap fights with people, especially the local radio host. I'm better about that. I've disengaged that a little bit. But there are people, and I will say that these are people who are not regular watchers of the Celtics that rely on certain raw numbers to say, oh, Al Horford, look at the numbers he's putting up. How can he be an all-star when he's averaging 13 points a game?
Yeah.
All right, fine. I mean, if you want to make that argument without watching anything, sure. But like I said, he's not just a scorer. And in fact, that's never been his primary goal. He is a guy that wants everybody on the team to be involved, and he'll pass out of some shots that he probably should take. If there's a knock on Al Horford, is that he doesn't take shots sometimes that he should take, because Al Horford for three, when he's, even if a guy's closing out, Al Horford for three is better than swinging it around and Marcus Smart taking it. Like, that's, like, we can all agree on that. Yeah. And sometimes it's infuriating, but Al Horford plays the way he plays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody's a perfect player, but Al Horford does so many things well. And I think what we saw this season that I didn't necessarily see coming, is that he kind of coasted a little bit towards the end. Like, after the All-Star break, he went into a little bit of a slump. He wasn't really aggressive. And we learned after the fact that he was kind of taking it easy because he knew that they were going into the playoffs and he wanted to be ready for that. And we saw once the playoffs started, he just became a monster. Like, he was backing down Giannis in the post. Like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't realize he was going to be that much more, that much stronger than Giannis. And he really, really did a number on Giannis in the post. He defends Embiid really, really well and can even score on him in the post. So he's strong. He's deceptively strong. So he's been the most important player for the Celtics. He's the second best player in this series going into it with the Cavs. It's LeBron and then, you know, Al Horford headlines everybody else. He's just dynamic. He can do a lot. He can bring the ball up in certain situations. He runs the offense. He can just do so much. I can't say enough good things about him because he really is the guy that kind of makes everything happen for the Celtics offensively. Without Kyrie and, you know, Terry Rozier has been great, but he's not necessarily a playmaker. He's getting better, but he hasn't been. They spent most of the Bucks series without Marcus Smart, who is their other playmaker. So it's been on Al Horford to do a lot of these things, and mm-hmm. he's handled most of those things very admirably.
Hi, this is Katie Forbes from Twitter, and you are listening to Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
From Twitter. That's hilarious.
From Twitter, yep. Like, yeah. Like, that's like a, like I'm like a celebrity, but instead it's a social platform with like millions of people on it.
Is Brad Stevens getting too much credit? Because people will argue the roster is flush with high draft picks. Jaylen Brown, third pick. Jason Tatum, third pick. Al Horford, third pick. Marcus Smart, sixth pick. We go back to the regular season. Kyrie Irving's the first overall pick. Or maybe he does deserve the credit because you only get a team that has four players back from last year's squad. And they put together a 16-game winning streak early when you're supposed to be working out the kinks of the roster. I think that's amazing to me.
Yeah, so it's funny. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago, and I think the answer is both. In fact, mm-hmm. you can argue 3 points with him that he is getting exactly enough credit, that he's getting mm-hmm. too much, and that he's not getting enough. You can argue all of those things, and I think there's a little bit of each in that discussion. It's a very nuanced thing with Brad Stevens because to start, you have to give credit to the players. Like, good players make good coaches, and Brad Stevens can be drawing up all these good things, but if he didn't have all of these good players to execute it, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And then Brad Stevens looks bad because they say, oh, well, that was your out of bounds play. You know, a Jordan Crawford isolation. Like, no, we just had Jordan Crawford, and he can only do certain things. So back then, it was a little bit of a different story. Now, when you've got good players, you sit there and execute, and you say, wow, what a great play. But yeah, it takes the players are the guys who execute, and you need good players to make a good coach. So you can't give the coach so much credit that you take away what the players are doing, like you said. Jaylen Brown is really, really good. Jason Tatum is really, really good. They're both number three picks. Marcus Smart was a number six pick. Al Horford is – what pick was he?
He
was up very
– Number three.
Number three. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you've got a bunch of guys that everybody kind of knew going in were going to be pretty good. Like, when you pick third or, you know, six, like Smart – like, that's – they're supposed to be good players. So in that regard – then you got to make sure that the players are getting their due because they are the ones out there doing what they do. They are reading and reacting, and Brad Stevens can call a play and Al Horford could be like, nope, I see something else and read it. And Jason Tatum can read Horford and they can do something different and it works out. At the same time, Brad Stevens is getting the absolute maximum out of these guys. That Jason Tatum has made a ton of progression over the course of his first year here in Boston. Jaylen Brown has made a tremendous impression between his first year and second year, and even in-year progression has been awesome. He's doing a lot of things great. Even guys like Shane Larkin, who, like I said, was out of the league last year, is doing important things. You know, Aaron Baines is doing important things. These guys that didn't play great elsewhere are somehow in Boston playing above their expectations. So that is a credit to Brad Stevens, absolutely. See, there's a spectrum of things. It's a combination of the players who should get their credit. It's a combination of Brad Stevens who should get the credit. The other assistant coaches should absolutely get the credit. Mm-hmm. Danny Ainge for going out and getting these guys should get the credit. So, I mean, Brad Stevens deserves basically most of the accolades that he's getting, but it is also very important to note that these players are really good and they should also be sharing in the credit, which, and in Boston, I think they are. And it's just important that that gets said.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you think the Celtics could beat the Cavs, right? And, well, how much do you like the Celtics for this series? Because the Cavs went from vulnerable to super dangerous in a matter of a couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I think it's important to look at series in a certain way. I'll give credit to David Locke, who is the founder of our podcast. I'm not sucking up the boss, but I heard it from him, so I want to give him the credit that when something goes that well in a series, that you almost can't look at it like, wow, they had four great games. They had one great game four times. Mm-hmm. And because of the matchup and because of the way everything went, it was not that they did all of these great things over the course of four games. They did one thing and repeated it four times. So, and I say that because when people were looking at Philly coming into the Boston series, they were way overreacting to how they looked against Miami. Mm-hmm. When they really just had a good matchup and Hassan Whiteside was trash and Pudgy was trash, that they really, it accentuated a huge matchup advantage for the Sixers. And they took advantage of that over and over and over again. So you can't get caught up in the fact that somebody swept. You gotta look at what's the matchup. What can be done? And there are a couple of things here when it comes to the Celtics in this series. I don't know how it's going to go. Like, I don't feel confident. I'll say Celtics in seven because they've got home court, mm-hmm. but I'm not confident in that at all because LeBron can just LeBron his way through. And, you know, what are you going to do? Like, sometimes that's just going to happen. Ask the Raptors. Mm-hmm. Like, there is definitely some of that.
Yeah.
But. The way the Celtics can beat the Cavaliers is you throw waves of people at LeBron, and you just deal with it. Single coverage as best you can. And even if that means Semi Ojeleye, Gershon Yabusele, any kind of big, beefy, brawny guy that you can throw at LeBron, and you turn every one of LeBron's drives into a sumo match and just hit him. By the fourth quarter, he is going to start settling for jumpers, I think, because mm-hmm. as great as he's been, as impervious to Father Time as he seems, he's not. And if you beat him down and make him be the only guy that can do anything out there, by the fourth quarter, he's going to start settling for jumpers, and he's going to start trying to kill you with threes. Sometimes he will, but very often he won't. That's the weakest part of his game. So... Mm-hmm. If you can spend the first two, three quarters just absorbing whatever punishment he gives you, stay home on whatever shooters are out there, don't lose Kyle Korver, and then you keep Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson, because I'm sure Tristan Thompson's going to get an opportunity here, keep those guys off the offensive boards. If you can keep those guys off the offensive boards, and not let the shooters that they do have kill you, then I think they have a chance to tire out LeBron and have him settle for jumpers, and that's enough to beat them 4 out of 7 times, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Celtics were the last team to beat LeBron James in the East. We know what happened the year after. Are you thrilled about history possibly repeating itself?
At this point, whatever. You know, if they lose to the Cavaliers, it sucks. I'm sure in the moment it'll be fine. It'll suck, but it's ultimately fine. And then whatever. Right. History repeats itself. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Right. Yeah, but you have to be really happy with how the team's doing. Again, last year we talked about how they're in a really good position, and here they are again, back in the East Finals with missing Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. So you really have to be confident how they're going to go into the next few years or so.
Oh yeah, totally. This is the absolute best case scenario, because it's really important for guys like Tatum and Brown, Rozier, to get this level of experience, to know what the battles are like, you know, especially Tatum, especially Brown, to get this deep again for Jaylen Brown, to get this deep right away for Tatum, to get that taste and know how hard it is to win on the road, how hard it is to win a playoff series. You kind of have that appreciation of being able to kind of gear yourself up for that and understand the difference between regular season and postseason and prepare your body for that type of beating. Tatum definitely needs to get stronger, and now I think he really realizes exactly how strong he needs to get for it. So it's really just an awesome learning experience. I'm excited for these guys. I'm excited for what this team is going to be moving forward. Like you said, Kyrie healthy next year, Hayward healthy next year. That's going to be really, really amazing. And then on top of it, let's not forget that the Celtics have the, you know, assuming that the Lakers pick doesn't convey this year, they could have the Sacramento pick in next year's draft. So they're going to the conference finals this year. They're getting Hayward and Kyrie back, and next June they could have something as good as the number 2 pick in the draft. So I'm very excited.
I mean, geez, what else can I say, right? Like, the whole trade for KG and Pierce worked out like this, you know, like that's just awesome rebuilding. Like, I can't hate on that. I just can't. Like, that's just really good team building, you know? So.
Yeah, amazing. Like, he took advantage of a situation. Like, it was a perfect storm. Perfect storm. Like, it's almost impossible. It's the Star Wars shot and got. But hey, Brooklyn had a new owner. He was cocky, brash in the New York market. Billy King was just like, yeah, whatever you need me to do. And everything worked out perfectly to get this rebuild going, and it's just been amazing. That's been one of, if not the best, trades in NBA history.
Yeah, I'm sure the Nets were happy with their second exit, right? So, so I can't let you go without talking about how long we've known each other, like nearly a decade now. Yeah. And I just talked to Glenn Moore recently on this podcast, and of course it brings up Blogs of Balls and how we were so noisy when we all first met.
Man, I still think about those days, man. That it was at what was that place in New York City? That Guinness place.
Foley's? Was it Foley's?
I think so. Yeah. That was wild, man. We've known each other for a good bit. Like we've been around since like before Twitter.
Kind of. I think I met you on Twitter first, and then
basically it was like, hey, let's try this Twitter thing out. Like that's how long we've been around.
Yeah.
Like we were like the beta testers.
Yeah. Well, we're basically OG basketball Twitter. And again, like, look how far all of us have come. I mean, look at the old 8-seed brotherhood back in the day. Like, we've all come so far since then, right? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned how Tom Zeller said that basketball Twitter is getting worse, but I look at it more like, well, everybody has Twitter now, so of course everyone's louder, right?
Yeah.
That's how I look
at it. Yeah, it's how you want to, the perspective that you want to take. Like, yeah, some of it's getting worse because there are people who can troll and who want to troll, and that's their goal, and it's just piss you off and get you to react. And like I said, I admit sometimes I react because for various reasons, you know, I'll take the bait. I gotcha. I'm not going to say I'm innocent in any of this, but at the same time, Twitter has allowed for so many great things. Like, this whole statistical revolution, go to the NBA.com stat site and how amazing it's become. That's because of Twitter. Mm-hmm. Because the people like Zach Lowe and Matt Moore and all of the people who are really pushing the analytics hard have put it into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. They're the ones, and you know, those of us who slowly latched onto the whole thing and appreciated the nuance in the numbers started blogging about it, and the blog started to become successful, and the content was good, and it was all shared through Twitter, and Twitter has become the basketball place. Like, we just, yeah. It's perfect for basketball. It's perfect for the NBA. And if it wasn't for all of that, if it wasn't for sharing great content on Twitter, then the league wouldn't have evolved like this. Like, I really do believe that this pushed the league in this direction, that analytics, the way they were embraced online, the way they were embraced through blogs, really showed everybody that there was value in this. You get to see how people really broke the numbers down. And because we had these debates on Twitter, everything was made better. And slowly we started to see the evolution of different sites providing that content, and the NBA saying, well, we need to provide that content as well. And now you're really just starting to see, this is just how it is now. But way back when, it wasn't how it was. There was a big fight, and I get what's being said about basketball Twitter, but that's just one side of it. The other side of it can be really awesome, and it can foster some serious relationships, and it could foster some really good content. So you got to take the good with the bad sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So we should take credit for basketball Twitter, right? Yeah, again, we were kind of early in this. Like, we were like the first wave of basketball Twitter, right? Like,
totally.
Yeah. I mean, totally. I came in, 2008, and we started talking, 2009, basically, right? So we've been around, man. We've seen it all.
We have.
Yeah.
We're old men. We might as well do this podcast in a rocking chair. Instead of a right, we should be on a rocking chair talking into like a manual tape recorder with a cassette in it.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I am on a rocking chair right now. No, I'm kidding. John, go ahead and publicize your websites, podcasts, news sites. Man, you're everywhere in the East Coast, like I said, man.
Yeah, you know, I try, like I said. So obviously you can find a lot of my stuff on RedsArmy.com. Mm-hmm. You can go to Boston.com on the Celtics section and find a lot of my stuff. In fact, I have a new thing out right now ranking all of the players in the Celtics-Cavs series from 1 through 20 whatever. So I've got that. If it's not published yet, it will be soon. So go check that out on Boston.com. And obviously the Locked On Six podcast, I'm on that. We are live. We publish a podcast Monday through Friday. And then I'm also on the Locked On NBA show on Wednesday nights that I co-host that with Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. I do a lot.
You do a lot, yeah. And after all this time, I'm still trying to find out Saturday Night Blogs and Balls. I'll never find out. I will never find out.
Oh, man.
Thanks. That's great. Thanks, John.
You got it, my man.
Hashtag blame Ray Ray.